Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app for your smart device, CairoRadio.com, and the all-new Adore Network at Adore.fm. Let's get started with the episode. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 274, what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a great show planned for you this week. Ian Cunningham of two bands, Acid Tongue and the Mama Rags, is going to be joining us here shortly in the backyard. We had this conversation, like 2 months ago? Was it that long? We've got a lot of just backlogged stuff that we're getting to right now, folks. We have a great conversation with topics ranging from addiction and how Ian has dealt with that in his friend space, in his circle of friends, and it's not always easy. So we talk about that a little bit. We talk about his kid, who he, you know, does not get to see on a regular basis, and how that influences his music and his playing and his want to be able to do it for a job. And it's a really good discussion. So I hope you guys are going to enjoy it. Actually, I know you will enjoy it, right? That's why you tune into this here show. Let's see. A couple of things before we get into that. Also, we're going to be playing music from Acid Tongue and the Mama Rags throughout the episode, as we do. It's going to be a good one. All right? A lot of good music to share with you. A lot of good stories as well. Let's see. Halloween, man. Did you guys have a good Halloween? I had a great Halloween. We had a great time. We had a little party. Had some friends over with their respective childrens, and went trick or treating in a big old group here in the neighborhood, just had a great time, man. The rain stopped for moments, for probably like half an hour, which was perfect for getting a bunch of like 4-year-olds and 3-year-olds out into the streets. That was it was the perfect amount of time to go trick-or-treating. And we met this really cool guy by the name of Jay Johnson, if you can believe it. Just moved over here from Baltimore, Maryland. And he gave me his contact information for contact him through Facebook, because we invited him in to have some food and a drink with his wonderful little daughter, Jay Lynn. And he was a great dude, podcast enthusiast. Think I turned him on to listening to Air Raid, which is great. Hey, Jay, if you're listening to this, I cannot find you on Facebook, sir. So reach out to me, will you? Along with all you guys, if you have something you want to state or bring up, or music that you want us to check out or whatever, you can contact me directly at aaron at air-raid.net. I hope Jay reaches out, because he just moved over here, probably doesn't know a whole lot of people, he was a good dude. So yeah, contact me, Jay. All right, a couple things on here. Let's see, I mentioned this at the end of the show last week with Aqueduct, and the RSS feed. Do you guys know what the RSS feed is? It's this little box with a little, like, you know, sound waves coming off of it at a diagonal direction, all right? That's, like, where all of the shows go, right? So if you're using, like, a third-party app to get the podcast, which you might be using that to get all your podcasts on your smart device or your mobile device. I don't know why I keep on calling it a smart device. I think I can stop doing that, right? It's just mobile device. On your mobile device, if you're using a podcasting app, it uses the RSS feed, Okay? Our RSS feed, the Air Raid RSS feed, is going to be changing. So, just to let you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be changing that RSS feed to the Spreaker RSS feed. Now, if you want to get a jump on this, you can go to adore.fm, click on Air Raid, and go to the Spreaker site, and find the RSS feed link right there, and then resubscribe to that RSS feed rather than the one that is available at air-raid.net. Let's see, in a couple weeks, the website RSS feed, this is all very confusing, the website RSS feed will be changed to the Spreaker RSS feed. And we'll make sure to mention this in the oncoming episodes, the upcoming episodes as well, so you guys are all prepared, okay? All right, so that's that. Also, you're going to be able to see my ugly mug on the show Banned in Seattle, which airs here in the Pacific Northwest on the CW. Many of you know that I have been on Banned in Seattle, talking about the local music scene being the, and this is in quotes, I'm doing the quotations on my fingers. This is, you know, I'm the music expert that gets invited onto the show sometimes. I think I've done like 5 episodes or something like that. I can't remember. But it's a lot of fun to do and everything. And got some great news the other day. My ugly mug, my episodes are going to be featured on Alaskan Airlines as some of the in-flight entertainment. So if you see me on Alaskan Air, will you take a picture of it for me and just send that to me or something? Because I'd love to see that, because my ego is not big enough yet. I need to expand my ego. No, that's not the reason. I just want to see it. I don't know. It's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. So look out for that. Banned in Seattle. You can get it on all Alaskan Air flights. I believe all of them. Or maybe it's just out of Seattle. I don't know. It's part of the in-flight entertainment. So tune into that. Okay. All right. Let me entertain you in the skies. Let's see. The seasons have officially changed here in Seattle, folks. It has gotten cold, and it's gotten dark, and of course, we're all experiencing the fatigue that comes along with daylight savings time, which is just total bullshit, and everybody's talking about it once again. Just a bunch of crap. Now I'm going to work when it's dark, and I'm leaving when it's dark. But you know what? I kind of like it. I was thinking about it today on the bus ride home. It's comforting to me for some reason. I find it comforting. I used to, when I got my first job here in Seattle, working as a geologist, I also kind of ran this soils lab, and I was the only one doing kind of I was the lab technician in there, along with being the staff geologist that would go and collect these samples and everything like that. But I would do these complicated soils testing and stuff like that. And there was one called a hydrometer test, where you would test the particles in a suspended column of water to see how many really, really tiny microscopic particles were in that soil, like clay and silt particles. Okay? And it was like a 24-hour test. That's how the amount of time it would take. So if you set it up in the middle of the day, you would have to show back up in the morning at like 3 a.m. or something like that to take your next reading on this test. And so I would come in at 3 a.m. sometimes into the lab and just start my day. And it'd be pitch black. And the soils lab was in this weird part of Seattle, where it was right off of Aurora, which is this huge, long strip, this straight strip. Right. And I had no idea this was occurring. But one day I show up to the soils lab, unlock the door, and a bunch of people are out in the street, right? With all these like crazy cars. And I had walked into a situation where people were street racing. There was like a whole group of people there street racing. I had never seen anything like it in my life. Except for when I saw the Fast and the Furious movie. It was exactly like that, man. I mean, they had lights on the bottom of their cars and everything like that. People were booming, like loud music and everything. And I show up and I just start doing my work. And I'm watching these people like getting prepared, because it was on a side street, getting prepared to go out onto the main strip of Aurora and do their street racing. And it was crazy, man. Like, girls in scantily clad outfits and really short shorts at 3 a.m. in the morning. This actually exists, I thought to myself 10 years ago. It was crazy. It was absolutely... But I have fond memories of going, not only seeing, like, some of these weird street racing events, but just going to the Soils Lab at 3 a.m. and getting my groove on. Turning on the radio, being all alone, all by myself, getting to just do my work, man. Just do my work. And then coming home when it was dark again. I was working long hours, man, when I was younger. I could do that. I could do that. It felt good for some reason. I don't know. I could hang with it. Now I can't do that. But there's something comforting about going to work when it's dark and then getting home when it's dark. And just kind of curling up with your kids or with your wife or your girlfriend or whoever. By yourself, maybe your right hand, curling up with your right hand under the covers. That's gross. That's gross. And just chilling and watch a movie or something like that. And having maybe a glass of wine or something. Yeah? Isn't that fun? I think it's fun. I think it's fun. I love it. Yeah. So the seasons are changing. We hope you guys had a great Halloween. I did as well. And now it's basically Christmas. So let's get ready for that, right? Okay. Let's get on with it, shall we? Let's get into this chat with Ian Cunningham. We're going to be featuring music, like I said, from his bands, Acid Tongue and the Mama Rags. Ian, if I didn't mention it before, is the drummer for both of these bands. He is a powerhouse on the skins, man, and a lot of fun to watch. So if you'd like to catch Acid Tongue, they are going to be on tour this month, starting on the 6th. They'll be in Wenatchee, Washington at Wally's. The 16th in Seattle, here in Seattle at Barboza. Then the 21st, San Diego at the Tap Room. Los Angeles on the 22nd and the 23rd. The 24th in San Francisco. 25th, Sacramento. And then on and on. So I would highly recommend you check out this band. Great kind of throwback sound. Let's do this. Let's play this song Lately off of their... EP that's available now. It's called I Died Dreaming. All right, this is Lately by Acid Tongue, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
You know I hang my head in shame.
like. I remember the first time it was with Marco.
Yeah,
and you came to Jake Udy's birthday.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At the Cafe Racer.
Might have only been once. I don't know if there was another time after that.
You sure we didn't see each other at a show or something like that? You're usually going to all these shows.
Maybe. I don't remember. Yeah. Like the only time I remember is Jake's birthday.
Okay. Okay. So, well, that was it.
Yeah, that's it.
Shit.
And then online. But that's how everybody knows everybody in Seattle.
Right, right. Yeah. That's pretty much right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Facebook.
Yeah. I've met a lot of people that I have no idea who they are.
Yeah. I was talking to Barry from Sebastian in the Deep Blue the other day at this show about Facebook and that idea that, like, we have our whole little Seattle music scene, and
yeah,
it's all on Facebook, basically. But
yeah,
outside of that, probably no one knows who any of us are, and we think we're more important in town than we are because we just have this small eco bubble, and outside of that, we don't exist. And, like, people at Amazon probably don't know who any of our bands are, care.
Nope.
And, you know, we think we're coming up in the city, and we're not.
We all like each other's posts.
Yeah, and that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've had a couple of run-ins with people. I think that may have expected me to know who they were.
Yeah.
You know, because of like those social, networking interactions and things like that. And yeah, I mean, I feel terrible.
Yeah. I used to add a lot of people when our band was starting out just to get more in the scene, but I never approach anybody that I recognized because I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to put anybody on the spot.
I've been in that position as well, like where they didn't recognize you or know who you were, even though you've interacted online.
That's actually how my girlfriend Maya and I met.
It's very awkward.
Maya and I were friends on Facebook for a while, and then I met her at one of Marco's shows. And her like introductory line was, aren't we friends on Facebook? And I, you know, went tongue-tied, and now we're dating. So it's thanks to that.
Wow.
Yeah.
You work fast.
Super fast. It only took like a month
after that.
There's
nothing sexier
than
Facebook stalking and just being super weird and awkward in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ian Cunningham joining me in the backyard. Thank you, sir, for making the trek up here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of a trip for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was almost an hour to get from downtown. So.
Yeah, you were supposed to be here. Let's see how late you are right now. Yeah, an hour ago.
Exactly.
Good job. Nice. Good job. That happens.
Yeah.
It happens, man. Yeah, no worries. And now we're just sipping coffee and things just got awkward, like we were talking about before.
Yeah. It's because we met once. There's nothing to talk about.
That's right.
That's
Yeah.
We're over.
Totally.
Shortest
totally.
Podcast.
Well, Ian, you're the drummer for the band called The Mama Rags and also for this this newer band called Acid Tongue, which is super great. And you fill in on the drums on the Skins for a band called Thunder Pussy here in town as well.
Yeah, occasionally.
Yeah.
And that's about it right now.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't
have
I don't
you done
pour
more?
Myself out too much.
Have you done more? Drummers are like, drummers are very hard to come by, it seems like.
Yeah. I think any instrument, everybody always says, because I have the hardest time finding keyboards.
Oh, really?
Like, I can't find people that play synth stuff well without being like full-on electric.
Uh-huh.
Like electronic DJs or something. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, everybody I know is drummers, so it's not that hard for me to find them, but I always
So you got your own inner circle from the inner circle.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, Emily from Sisters and I are talking about doing drummer brunch where we just get all the drummers to go out for breakfast like one weekend.
That's a really
a
great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you should do that.
I do too. I love brunch, so
Yeah, this is the second time you've brought up brunch.
Earlier. I know.
You said because you're getting older, you are a father as well and a very busy musician with a day job that you can't go to brunch as much as you could in the past.
It's a travesty.
Welcome to adulthood, sir.
I know.
Yeah.
See, but that's the thing is when you watch rom-coms, you expect that adulthood is just brunch every day.
That's totally
it's
true,
so misleading.
Man. Yeah, yeah.
I'm very disappointed.
That's why they're so. That's probably one of the reasons why rom-coms are so popular.
Everybody has a kitchen that looks like IKEA,
and they don't
use it, and they go to brunch.
Right.
Yeah.
They never cook. They're always getting takeout, eating out of the folded containers that you get at Chinese restaurants.
And their perfect Urban Outfitter homeware.
Yes, yes. They always have nice throw pillows on a very modern and hip couch that looks not very comfortable.
With like the coolest apartments that are all brick in with like sliding steel doors.
Yes.
It's bullshit. Why do we not all have that?
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. It's like, you know, if that was real, they would all be living in Detroit because that would be the only place that you could afford something like that.
They probably do all live in Detroit.
Yeah, but most rom-coms seems like it takes place in either New York or L.A. True. Did you think you were going to talk about rom-coms when you came on the show today?
Yeah, I mean, did I not tell you that's why I'm here? I'm promoting my new rom-com direction rom-com. With my life. Yeah. Drums and Love.
There you go. Oh, coming to theaters. Dude. Oh, yeah. We'll get Lynn Shelton to direct that.
Perfect.
She'd be perfect for it.
Yeah.
So drums, I've always been fascinated with drumming. It was something that I could never do.
Yeah.
Totally great. I used to play drums in a band.
Okay.
And it was awful. It was terrible. I mean, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. We had a great time. It was only a two piece too. So you could really just go dirty
on
it.
You were fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. But man, I mean, it's just the frickin', like I would play to the point of exhaustion, which didn't take long because I have no coordination, right? With my feet and my hands. They always, like my right arm would always have to be doing the same thing as the kick drum.
Yeah.
Right? Is that a normal thing?
Yeah, I think for
starters,
most
probably,
people,
right?
Really, the only thing you have to do for drumming, you have to be able to have rhythm, which is pretty odd. But really, that's it. Like, the foundation for becoming a drummer, you just inherently have to be born with rhythm, and after that, you can learn the rest of it. The foot thing with the hand thing, totally everybody starts with.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those things can be trained and gone, but if you have no rhythm, it's like taking vocal lessons, but you, like, have terrible, you know, you don't have, I don't know, whatever the opposite of perfect pitch is. Like, you just can't hit anything. You're flat constantly.
Right.
Like, you're never going to be able to get out of your own head if you can't hit notes in the first place.
Yeah.
Like,
you're a normal, basically. Yes. Yeah. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's it. As long as you can count to four and you're not rushing or dragging just naturally, the rest of it you can learn.
How long have you been playing drums?
At a professional level, only like 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
3 years. I had a terrible first rock band my junior year of high school.
Uh-huh.
That lasted a month. And it was called Five Car Pile Up. And the music sounded like a Five Car Pile Up. And then I was in a band called Fair Do Surf down in Portland, which was kind of like Vampire Weekend indie pop.
Okay.
And I was in that for about 2 years.
This was still high school?
This was, my senior year of high school and then half of my freshman year of college.
Okay, so did you start playing in high school then?
Yeah, so I mean, to go back, I didn't even start on drums. I took piano lessons for 11 years when I was 5, going from there. And then I played trumpet in the school band from 5th grade through sophomore year of high school.
Yeah.
And I was in a handbell choir during that time, too, where it's just like 12 people around a table picking up like Christmas Salvation Army bells and ringing them all together as a choir.
So that was kind of like your first
rhythm.
Entry into like percussive instruments, right?
Yeah,
there.
Totally.
Are bells considered a percussive instrument?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially like that. There's a lot of, because I, being one of the few men in that choir, would play the big ones.
Okay.
And the big bells are probably...
The big fuckers?
Yeah, the big fuckers are probably... What's something comparable? The biggest one's probably around like the size of a basketball.
Whoa.
In size. And it's gotta be
heavy.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. But you pluck, like you pick up the bell on the inside.
Yeah.
And you just throw it down on the table to make like a plucking noise. Or there's mallets and you hit them on the table.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's tons of stuff. It's not just ringing out.
Right.
Like you're looking for donations.
No, of course. Yeah. It was a choir.
Yeah, so
a lot of the mallets
and stuff was definitely like an intro into drumming.
Sure.
My parents bought me a drum kit when I was probably like 14. And then I took drum lessons for about a month.
Was it something that you wanted to do, or were your parents like, let's get this kid into something?
No, I mean, at that point, I was already into stuff. I'd been playing piano for forever, and I was playing trumpet and all that stuff, and I was playing sports in elementary school. But I think it was, my mom says I was beating on things and trying to play percussion since I was born. And she played drums for a little bit in her high school band.
Oh, that's rad.
Yeah, so like snare kind of stuff with a marching band. That was my mom.
Oh, okay. She was in a drum line.
Yeah, not like a rock band. But so I think because of that background, she was totally down for me to go for it. My dad doesn't have an artistic bone in his body. He'll be like the first person to tell
you that. What's he do?
He's in construction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And he played a lot of sports and school and that kind of thing. He's very like masculine.
He was the jock.
Yeah, but he can't sing. He can't play an instrument. So when I got drums as a 14-year-old, yeah, and it's just noise, I don't really think he was down for that one.
Did he ever get pretty pissed off? I mean, I'd imagine. Oh, really?
Like, I'm at a level where I am finally starting to do this, you know, with my time, and he's still, like, if I'm banging on a table or something and I don't notice at home, he'll get mad. It's even to this day. So that's never going away.
But, now, are we talking, like, mad, or are we talking annoyed?
I mean, it's a fine line, but it starts as annoyed, and if you don't stop, then it's mad.
Then it's mad.
I mean, it's... Yeah, our family has a nerve, and if you hit it, then it's escalated.
It's done.
So, yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, back to the progression of things. I took drum lessons for like a month, and my drum teacher, being as most drummers, flaked a lot during that month, and it just wasn't working out. He wasn't a good
He just would not show up.
He'd be late, or he'd just cancel for a gig or something. It just wasn't working out, and so I quit, and then... That was probably like seventh grade that I did that, and I didn't really touch them again until I started bands in high school.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I was terrible in those high school bands too.
Yeah.
I think it was only really once we started the Mama Rags that I stopped sucking. So
right on.
Yeah.
You ever go back to? Is there any video footage of like your first bands?
On my computer, there's not online.
Yeah.
There was a video for a while of me playing by myself online. That I don't even remember posting, but I had to like email YouTube and ask them to take it down because I didn't want it out there. Yeah. So there's no proof anymore except on my personal computer.
I have a VHS tape of the very first gig that I played with like my first band, like my first actual band. Yeah. And it was in college and I was so nervous. It was just at this like opening day of this tattoo parlor in Ellensburg, Washington. And we just brought, nobody sang. We didn't have any lyrics for any songs or anything like that. So it was just like kind of these indie pop songs that I had written. Yeah. And then these jam band songs that this other guy had written. Nice. And it was just a mishmash.
You could have really started a whole new genre. It was like indie hipster fish.
It was kind of like that. It kind of morphed into that kind of music.
And then like Ellensburg could have been the new Aberdeen.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. It was the
could
new
have
Aberdeen.
Put that place on the map.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Are you saying I would like commit suicide at some point? Is that where you were going with that?
I mean, if you're playing hipster fish music, probably at some point.
Yeah, yeah. You just put yourself out of your misery.
Speaking of both of those things, though, I was watching that Montage of Heck movie, and just the amount of like home footage that they have of him as a kid on video, I realized if I died, there wouldn't be a movie. Like, there's no material.
Really?
We don't have film, really, of us younger. We have a lot of photos. So it could be like a PowerPoint slideshow documentary, but there's not like some video of Ian in the backyard at 4 years old, running around. But there's none of that. And they seem to have hours on hours for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was probably on actual film, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Like some of it was probably VHS and stuff like that. But God, I remember. Yeah. My parents have a lot of footage of me up until probably, I would say, junior high.
Yeah.
And they had to go in on, like, those fucking old recorders, those VHS video cameras, were so prohibitively expensive back then in the 80s. Like my parents had to go in on one with my aunt and uncle who lived in the same hometown, and they would just, you know, pass it back and forth.
Yeah. And I remember our first Mac computer. Yeah. I remember the first Mac, like Apple computer that our family had.
Yeah.
And just how slow that thing ran.
Oh,
and like just the desktop layout still, I think I remember. like pixelated everything was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. I mean, like my kid, I have so much video of. Like you could probably make a fucking trilogy, like Lord of the Rings length, 6-hour movies.
Sure. Well, now it's so easy. You got it on
your phone.
Yeah,
that's it.
Man.
I mean, it's my whole phone. That's all of the memory in my phone.
Right, right. But the problem now is that you have to go in and like save that shit, back it up, and put it on like an external hard drive. You're probably better at this than I am because you do photography as well.
Yeah.
But man, it takes like a lot to get me to do that. Even though I'm like, you know, what am I going to do with these photos? Am I going to print any of them out? I have no idea. I mean, it's just basically going
to
become...
Just give it to like, your kid later.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. Like, my parents have a huge cardboard box full of photographs.
Yeah.
absolutely brimming over the top with photographs.
Yeah.
And I guess what my kids are going to have is like several different hard drives that they need to plug into something else to actually see the photo.
Right.
And who knows if they'll ever fucking do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I don't. I mean, they will. They definitely will.
You think
will.
So?
Totally. I mean, if you go, this is like 20 hours worth of your childhood right here, they'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I guess the way you got to think about it is that it's just a change of scenery, right?
I mean, the bigger worry you should have is how they're going to access it, because just think about when, if your kids were in the 90s, all your shit
right.
would be on like floppy drives.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then how
like, I don't have a fucking
it?
VHS
no.
player anymore.
Exactly.
How am I supposed to watch this video of me sucking in a tattoo parlor?
I think there's shops that'll pull that and digitize it, and then we can all experience your tattooed Ellenberg.
Oh man, it
jam
was
fish
it
hipster.
Was bad. I let's see, the last time I watched it was just, I mean, it was just so embarrassing, and it was by myself, right? But I couldn't even make it through the thing.
Yeah, but that's, you know? I feel that way about shows 3 weeks ago. So. I mean, that's always going to happen.
yeah, totally, totally. Okay, well, back to your experience here. So, playing in a couple bands in high school, you kind of started doing the percussion thing,
yeah,
and getting back into it. And where were you from originally? Were you here in Washington?
Yeah, so I grew up down in Vancouver, Washington, which is
the last
town before you cross over the river into Portland.
Yes,
I was actually born up here. And we spent 7 or 8 years up here.
Here in Seattle?
I was in Linwood for those early growing pains years.
Yeah, for people who don't know, Linwood is north of Seattle.
Yeah, it's just a suburb.
It's a strip mall.
Yeah, it's a strip
basically.
Mall. We lived in a strip mall until I was 8, and then we moved to Cowland down in the bottom of Boonville, Washington. And then went to high school down there, and I moved back up to Seattle to go to UW. College, and then I've just stayed here since then.
What did you study in college?
Oh, I studied everything. I originally went to UW to become a doctor.
Really?
Yeah, I was dead set on becoming a surgeon, and so I finished everything for going to medical school except one organic chemistry class.
Really?
Yeah, and then the day I dropped that organic chemistry class, 2 hours later, I got a phone call that I was having a kid.
Whoa. Okay, hold on. Did you not want to finish the major?
Yeah, that was pretty much I kind of, the Mama Rags had started up, and I think even without that happening, I was getting to a point where I realized that this wasn't what I wanted to do with my life.
Okay.
I think the creative bones in my body were like, going into medicine kind of cuts off any ability to do anything.
Right.
Except for what's instructed of you and written down in a very tidy little box. And so that wasn't really my shtick. And even, I was doing a lot of medical trips. I went to Peru for a medical trip, and I backpacked to Belize over Christmas break with my buddy.
Uh-huh.
And just doing all of that, that was really what I had wanted to do if I became a doctor, was do a lot of like Doctors Without Borders kind of work.
Yeah,
and I realized that you could do that without spending 8 years in medical school.
Oh, really?
Like, there's opportunities to help out on those kind of programs anywhere.
Sure.
I mean, they need all the help they can get. So I just felt like it wasn't for me, and it was better to decide that before I became $200,000 in debt.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you must have been pretty far in debt already.
Yeah, I mean, at least it was undergrad. Right? It wasn't grad school.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I was only, that was my junior year of undergrad. But yeah, I was also a French major at that time. So I was a French major, going to become a doctor, and then I switched from all of that to business for like 5 seconds, and then I ended up in the English honors program and graduated with a degree in English.
Yeah.
So I started out college with this very high promising position of becoming a doctor, and then I ended with an English degree.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it kind of all went downhill for me.
So, like, did the English degree hold anything for you other than just the degree?
Yeah.
Like, was it something that you were interested in anyway?
Totally. I mean, I'm actually good at writing.
Yeah.
I do some writing on the side even now. I've written articles for Consequence of Sound.
Right.
For music, and I contribute a little bit here and there to local, like, Not a Mucho and Seattle Music Insider articles occasionally.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, writing was something I was always into, and I loved reading. So I figured a major, really, what pushed me, I think, to the English major was, I loved my French major, but I really sucked at it. Like, I was not good. And so I kind of asked myself, why am I doing this major where I'm averaging like B minuses when I could be doing the same thing essentially only in a language I understand,
right?
And get A's. So yeah, that's what I did, as I switched over.
Oh man.
Which it was really all like the same work. It was like read this book versus read this book in French. And
sure.
So one grade actually looked good and the other grade was struggling for the same thing. So
your comprehension in one of those majors was way higher.
Languages are overrated. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say.
Everybody speaks English anyway, right?
Exactly.
Right. Have you ever been to France?
I have, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've been to France.
That's like one of the countries that I'm afraid to visit.
Oh, that's great.
I've never been over to Europe.
It's great.
I would love to go. But France is like one of the ones that I'm kind of like tentative on.
Oh, no, it's perfect. Everybody hates everybody. It's not, and that's the thing, is like French get this.
So it's not just like Americans? Because that's
no, they hate everyone.
Okay, that's the thing that I don't want to.
We're not even like the ones they hate the most.
Okay.
So French hate everybody, which I think is what I like.
Yeah.
Is that it's kind of just across the board. They're just going to be standoffish dicks to everybody. But I'm fine with that because I don't like bubbly 4 in the morning Starbucks personalities. I want people who won't talk to me unless we have to talk. So it's the perfect fit.
Yeah.
They stay out of your way. Really, honestly, the best thing to do if you're going to France is to at least attempt to learn French. Because even if you're not good at it, they just get blown away that you even tried. Especially
even
as an American.
Spent a little bit of time on it.
Yeah. As an American, it's expected that you're going to go to France and not know any French. So even if your French is horrible and barely like kindergarten level French, the fact that you as an American even put in an attempt, they just see as this huge victory and they love you.
Okay.
So
okay.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, that's good. That's good to know.
Totally.
That's
I think that's any country though, really. I mean, if you just as an American, don't try and expect everybody to just speak English and the world revolves around you, people
will
love
dick.
You.
Yeah. Just don't be a dick.
It's not that hard.
I like that.
This has been a lesson from Aaron and Ian. The more you know.
Star with Rainbow. Well, let's do this. Let's go with our second musical break.
Okay.
And when we return, we'll kind of get into what you just mentioned before you quit your first major.
Perfect.
Okay. All right. Be back in a moment. about you. It's always that's basically what this show is. It's just
like
me learning.
Icebreaker.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an icebreaker for the next time we meet.
So now we've met twice.
Exactly. So before we left for the break, you were talking a little bit about your college experience and going to become a surgeon, and then at the last, basically the last moment when you needed one last class, you decided not to do that, and then the next day you found out you were a father.
Yeah.
Or going to be a father.
Yeah.
What year are we talking?
Let's see. Well, I mean, he turns two next month.
Okay, so 2 years ago.
2 years, 9 months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird. It's a tricky subject because there's some things I can't really talk about. Just
okay.
We're kind of still hashing some stuff out legally between her and I. So
yeah, yeah. This somebody that you met at school?
No, it was a one night stand from back home.
Oh, okay.
Actually, and yeah, we tried to make it work, and we weren't really compatible as like a romantic couple, and so she moved back home to Wyoming, and
oh wow,
yeah, and so she had him there, and then I've been visiting once a month for 2 years for a weekend.
What was going through your head at that point when you realized that you were going to be a dad?
I should probably go back to a job that makes money. So that was a bad time to become an artist.
Right, so, right. I'll major in English.
Yeah. I'm going to do it, Dad. I'm going to do dance.
Speaking of your parents, speaking of your father, like what was that conversation like?
So my dad was fine.
Yeah.
I told him first out of the two. That's actually not. So I told my best friend, and then I told my sister.
Yeah.
And this was like a week before I even told my parents.
Yeah.
Because when she told me, she was like, there's going to be another ultrasound. It's probably not even yours. I don't want to like freak you out yet. I'll know more next week. So I had a week before we said, yeah, it's mine. So in that week, I told my sister, and I'm freaking out on my own. But then once we confirmed it was going to be mine, then I had to tell my parents. And my dad was fine. The problem was my dad called my mom and told my mom before I had a chance to tell my mom.
Oh.
And that didn't go over so well.
Are they still together?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh, okay. My parents are fine.
She was just at work or something like that.
Yeah, she was at work.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough. No, you don't want your college kid to have a kid.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the order things are supposed to go in.
Yeah.
But since then, you know, it's kind of become the norm. It's, you know, it's been tough just with the distance. I don't get to see my kid as much as I would like.
Yeah.
Her and I are much better. I mean, we communicate better, and it's not like nasty between us or anything.
Yeah.
And she's a great mom. Like, she's a fantastic mom.
Well, your kid is super cute.
Thanks, man. Yeah. My kid's amazing.
Little boy.
Yeah. His name's River. Little blonde haired, blue eyed.
He looks exactly like you.
Yeah.
Pretty
it's,
much.
It's weird. It's Facebook a lot of the time gets photos and thinks that they're of me or of him and when it's me.
Yeah.
it mixes us up.
You guys, you have the same eyes and the same mouth.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool thing and I think I've read this a couple times too, especially for fathers. And I don't know what your experience was with it, but when I had my first child, the love was instantaneous.
Yeah, totally.
And you could see yourself in the kid's face.
Well,
right?
That's what's weird is every time I'm there, I'll be watching, you know, and that's part of the nice thing about how this has worked out is when I'm there, I'm there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So unlike a lot of parents, I get, you know, like 3 or 4 days where it's just 24/7. It's just my entire attention is him. There's no work.
Yeah.
I'm not checking emails. I'm not doing it. Like it's him. That's it.
Yeah.
That's my job during that time. So I can really like focus on him, which is nice. A lot of people don't have that. And obviously I'm losing out on a lot of things by not having him all the time. But
yeah,
the beauty is I get to just focus on him. But totally. I mean, we'll hang out and then I'll go to the bathroom and look in the mirror and I'm making a face that I just watched my kid make, and I never even noticed that it looks the same. It's crazy.
Right, but this article that I read was that, especially with newborns, is that they will take on more characteristics of the father, and this I could be totally pulling this out of my ass because I read this like 4 years ago.
Cite your sources.
Yeah, right, right. It was on Consequence of Sound.
Perfect.
And I think it was written by you.
Yeah,
yeah, it was weird. was right before you dropped that organic chemistry class.
Yeah. It's weird that the music publication's posting parenting articles now.
But they say that this article stated that they take on more characteristics of the father because, evolutionarily speaking, they want the father to stick around.
Yeah.
Right? So caveman days, they would just take off,
right,
whatever, go try to copulate with somebody else,
yeah,
you know, and spread the seed, for lack of a better term and grosser term. The kid takes on these characteristics to make you feel the love for that child.
Yeah.
Right?
They're little, like, tricky, heartless bastards.
Just like little demons.
Yeah.
Just
conniving little
like demons,
manipulative.
Man. Genetically demonic.
Yep. Offspring from
But I felt that. I felt that with my first child. Now, my second child, when we had Tegan, like, it took me a while to feel like, not, I don't want to say the love.
You're like, I already got one. Fuck this one.
Well, but it was different, right? Yeah. It wasn't, yeah, yeah. It's not like that. And don't worry, I know you were making a joke. Yeah, I don't feel like you.
You know I'm joking.
but it took a while for me to like really connect with Tegan.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was because she didn't really look anything like me,
right?
Or it wasn't because, you know, my attention was divided by two.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe. I don't know.
It took me a while, man.
I have another one, which will not be anytime soon. My motto is now one and done.
right. But do you like being a father though?
Yeah, it's great. It's amazing.
It's pretty rad, right?
It's the greatest thing I've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gotta be tough, dude. Like, what, you have to, does he ever fly over here?
He's going to for Thanksgiving this year.
Yeah.
That'll be the first time.
Are you excited about that?
Oh, I'm so stoked. We already have the whole week like planned out.
Nice.
So
I was going to be with you for a week.
Yeah. He's going to be with me for 5 days, six days. So we're going to start up out here and go to the zoo and, I don't know, see some family members that live up here still.
Yeah, that's great,
and then,
man,
we'll drive down to Portland and stay with my parents for the actual holiday.
Yeah,
and we used to have a house out in Cannon Beach, so we'll take him out there and take it out to the beach for a day.
That is the greatest spot ever.
Yeah.
I love going to Cannon Beach.
Yeah, I basically, like, semi-grew up out there, so it'll be good to take him out there.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's gotta be really freaking hard. I can't even imagine. My kids are gone right now, right? They're like, they're over at their grandparents' house until tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And, like, this is probably the longest, I think, I've been away from my two children.
Yeah.
You know, for any one stint. And like, last night I was talking to my daughter. My daughter was just losing it, dude. She was just, like, she was so homesick.
Yeah.
And she was like, "Daddy, I just love you, and I want to come home and
at least
stuff."
It feels good.
And I was like, "Oh God, that just breaks my heart, but makes me feel like
you're doing it right,
like I'm doing something right, man." Yeah, yeah. So it felt good, but sad at the same point. I mean, their mom is with them right now, so you know that's fine. But yeah, dude, I can't even imagine what it's like being away from your kid like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Pretty much every time I go there, I'm looking for apartments there the minute I come home. And, like, I'm ready to just quit music and move. Which, I mean, the only reason I haven't done that is because it's just financially doesn't make sense
to move
to a town where I don't know anybody that doesn't have, like, a big industry that I'm doing something productive in.
Sure,
you know, I don't want to work a minimum wage job until he's 40, just because, you know, like, that's just, I don't know. I think there's more than just the one way to, you know, care for my kid, provide for my kid.
No, I get it.
And
yeah,
if it was just about, you know, hanging out all the time, I would obviously be there, but somebody's got to pay for him to eat.
Uh-huh.
And so I, you know, I got to keep working.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Which
man.
Is here, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, yeah. And they're, man, Wyoming. So how often do you get to see him?
I see him once a month.
Once a month.
So I was just there 2 weeks ago, and I'm going back middle of October, and then he'll come here for a week, and then I'll go again in December right before Christmas.
Yeah. Are the flights like super expensive?
So I guess I forgot to say, a couple months ago they moved to Salt Lake, so it became way cheaper to fly there.
Oh, dude, yeah.
But it's horrible. Between that and just the legal bills of how this is all gone,
uh-huh,
like, it's it has not been good for my parents.
Yeah.
Let's just say financially. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we fly there and then we get a place to stay and you got to rent a car and we're there for 3 days. And
right. Right.
You got to get that time off work. And
well, it's good that your parents are helping you out with it though, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if it wasn't for my parents, I never would have met my kid. So
really,
I couldn't have afforded to get out there in the first place. And
yeah.
Yeah.
God dang, man.
Yeah.
That's a good testament to their love for you too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I owe my parents everything there. It's like, now I just need us to become actual, like, real rock stars so I can afford to pay them back, because I don't know any other way that I'm ever going to be able to pay my parents back.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's great. I mean, my mom comes every month too, pretty much.
Oh, good.
So she gets, I mean, I swear half the time my kid loves my mom more than he loves me. So.
Dude, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
That totally
it's
happens.
It's always grandma. Like, oh, yeah. If he wants to get picked up, I'll be like, can I carry you? And be like, no, grandma.
No, grandma.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was leaving my children the other day, and going to get on a ferry boat and leave them to come back here because I have to, you know, work.
Yeah.
They didn't want anything to do with the, like, goodbye at all. Like, yeah. I couldn't get her to kiss me on the cheek.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, you know, because she was playing with grandpa.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck you.
Yeah. I know. Just be like, be appreciative for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, come on,
you
man.
You play once I'm gone.
Jesus, Tatum.
Just fake it.
Yeah. That's right. So what else did that take a toll on, man? Did it take a toll on you artistically at all?
I don't know about all this stuff. I don't know so much artistically. There was a lot of personal stuff. I mean, in the beginning of him being born, things weren't great between me and his mom,
mm-hmm.
and so that's kind of how lawyers got involved. And
yeah,
just through all that, there was a lot of stress and the financial aspect of that on my parents. You know, I went up and down. I think I'm just naturally kind of depressed anyway.
Uh-huh.
And so this didn't help. And there was long periods of just, like, not eating. And there was periods of...
Not eating?
Yeah, and there's, like, times when I would go there and just... Pretty much, honestly, up until a couple months ago, every time I would go there, the last day, I wouldn't be able to eat anything. I was just so stressed about either leaving...
Just not hungry or just, like, not feeling like good, like a pit, like, in your stomach?
One time I tried eating and I threw up on the plane on the way back.
Like, really?
I can't do it. It's gotten a little better. But, yeah, just stress from that. I started drinking a lot when I was at home, and that didn't help. That was pretty much my main way of dealing with all of it. I've never seen, like, a psychiatrist or anything. I probably should, honestly, with just how crazy this has all been.
Yeah.
And just kind of the stress of... it's been a lot harder to see my kid than you would think, just because logistically with like legally the battle and that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah.
Kind of where I don't want to say
sure.
too much.
No, you don't have to. I'm not pressing you on
her or anything, but
yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't been easy even just to get the time that I've got with my kid. And so just kind of the stress of all that and, you know, am I seeing my kid enough? You know, I don't know. My main coping mechanism was alcohol for a really long time. So,
I did see that you posted, you spoke publicly about the drinking issue.
Yeah.
And now you had your last drink. How are you doing with that?
Good.
Are you keeping up with it?
Yeah. I mean, it's only been a month, so it's hard to like pat myself on the back for that. Cause it's only been a month.
I think you can pat yourself on the back.
I think there's people who have been like dieting who have gone longer than I have without alcohol, but, yeah, it's good. I quit drinking and I quit smoking, at about the same, I mean, it was the same time. It was about a day apart. And at the same time, I started going back to the gym. And I think that's what's kind of made it manageable and really pretty easy is once you start eating really healthy and you're, you know, working out a lot, then you don't want to do that stuff just from like a healthy perspective, not even just from like an alcoholism perspective.
Do you think I hesitate to say that it's an addiction, but do you think you swapped addictions?
Yeah, I think to some degree, totally. Yeah, before I quit drinking, I made a lot of excuses why I couldn't go do anything healthy. Like, oh, I have band practice tonight, I don't have time, but now I'm going straight from work to the gym, and then I'm going straight from the gym to practice. So
it
was totally doable. I just didn't want to do it.
Well, it's all about getting yourself to change,
yeah.
right? It's like you need to find something in your brain that you can switch on or, you know, basically like if you have the willpower to make yourself do it enough to where it becomes a normal act.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a really tough thing to do, especially for addicts. I had to go through that myself.
Yeah.
And part of that was being shipped off to college.
Right.
I shouldn't say shipped off to college because it was kind of like, I mean, my parents like basically made me go to college.
Yeah.
I did not want to go. And I was severely addicted to like painkillers.
Yeah.
And pills of all sorts, ranges and sizes. But, you know, going to college, and not knowing anybody, like, totally made me get clean.
Yeah.
Because first of all, I didn't know how to get anything over there.
Yeah.
And I was severely paranoid about that kind of stuff. And you know, I mean, shit, it was just all about like getting myself up, getting myself outside, you know, to go enjoy or try to make myself enjoy, like actually just walking around or riding my bike
right.
or something like that, you know, which was great. And now I'm in this fucking meat pad of a body.
We look like twins right now.
I know we are wearing the same shirt. Yeah. It hides my tummy rolls.
Yeah. It makes me look like I've been working out a lot harder than I have. So it's great.
Well, it's only been a month. Okay.
I know, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It makes it look like I'm actually trying. Yeah. I don't know. It's been, I kind of wish I had that just to not be able to drink.
Yeah.
You know, but like the first week of me quitting, we played this Red Bull show and they just provided us with all the booze in the back room that we wanted. And I'm totally. Sitting there trying to get a ginger beer. Just, you know, and that was really hard. My girlfriend was out of town. And so I'm doing it kind of on my own. And my band was giving me a lot of shit for quitting drinking. There was a lot of people. Well, I shouldn't say a lot, but there was some people, who gave me a lot of shit for even posting it. And I understand that. Like, I'm not really a public person with anything like that. And, like, I probably would have been the first person to make fun of somebody else for posting their problems on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
But it was tough when it was a lot of my close friends that were just, like, making fun of me. When a lot of people that I don't even know that well were like, that was a really awesome thing. Like, I got a lot of people just coming out of the woodworks saying this was really awesome. And I'm really proud of you. And I had probably half a dozen at least people saying, hey, I've actually been thinking about quitting too, and this was like what I needed right now.
Yeah.
So it was just really tough to get that from people I don't even know, and then like some of my best friends are the ones, you know, making fun of me.
Well, do you think that maybe they don't know how to handle it or talk about it? Because you see this all the time on like social media is that and I do the same exact fucking thing. Like, you try to post something that's funny.
Right.
Because we've been basically, you know, taught that, you know, you get that little source of dopamine when somebody likes your post, right?
Yeah.
And it's usually something sarcastic or funny or something like that. And, like, your close friends may not know how to actually deal with the situation.
Yeah.
And the only way they know is to be disarming and try to make a joke out of it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I probably would do the same thing. That's how I deal with most problems in my life is I just make fun of everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I also had people try to tell me that I was being dumb because I am not an alcoholic and, like, telling me that I don't drink too much. And, you know, and I don't know. Maybe people will have a bigger drinking problem than I do who, you know, don't think they're alcoholics. And that's, I guess, on them. But I felt like I was at a point where I couldn't control myself and I wasn't happy with what I was doing. So that's
unsustainable.
That's the definition of that is when you have a problem and you can't quit.
Sure.
And it's controlling your decision making, you know. And I think, especially because we're musicians, a lot of musicians are just like, no, that's just part of this lifestyle. That's who we are. And really, it's like, well, then am I just not an alcoholic because I'm a musician, or are we all fucking alcoholics?
Yeah.
And just none of us want to admit it.
I had a huge fear for a long time about telling people about my addiction and some of the things that I dealt with on a mental plane.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I don't really talk about anything is I don't.
Sure. Sure. Cause you're afraid. I mean, and the big thing for me was a fear for people finding out about something and saying, oh, that wasn't as bad as you kind of made it out to be, or is like, well, look at this guy over here that's hearing voices on the sidewalk and can't, you know, get out of the fetal position for 3 days at a time. Yeah. Like, you know, so, cause I suffered from schizophrenia. I still do from time to time, but it's very mild compared to what people think of schizophrenia. And my addiction to, you know, pills is something that I still battle to this day, you know?
Yeah. I didn't quit. I think part of it, like, I haven't gone to AA because I didn't quit smoking weed. I like marijuana has never been my problem.
Sure.
And I think that's it is I've never had an issue with it getting in the way of me doing anything.
Right.
I didn't ever feel like that one was out of control. And I know a lot of people in the AA community look down on that.
Yes.
Like you got to go 100% clean. And I totally understand that. And, you know, I still question maybe I should just to get it all out of there. But like my girlfriend needs it occasionally. She has really bad acid reflux. And so it helps her kind of at night with going to bed.
Sure.
When her stomach's upset, like weed just knocks her right out and it kind of helps soothe that problem. So it's like it's still going to be in our house and it does have benefits to us. I'm not sitting around all day, you know, getting high and just not being productive.
Obviously, well, for some people too, like weed will make you depressed, more depressed. It'll amplify that depression.
Yeah. It doesn't, it really just knocks me out. Makes me go to bed, which is great.
Sometimes do you feel like it could be adding to your depression though?
No,
have you tried have you tried going without it for a little while?
Yeah. I mean, I'll go dry. I don't really buy it very often. And so I do go through large periods of time where I don't have it.
Sure.
And I mean, more people have remarked lately that I've been happier in general since I quit drinking. So I would think that means I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
Well, and so here's the thing too, is that like, you know, the way I think about it, like with my own issues that I've dealt with in the past is like, I was probably like what some people on the addiction scale would probably say, like if we're talking, if we're comparing it to like a cancer, right? Addiction could be compared to a cancer, right? So just hear me out on this. Like I would be, on the addiction scale, I'd probably be like a stage two.
Yeah.
You know, I OD'd once.
Yeah.
And it was a bad scene. It was not fun.
Yeah.
And it was good that I got clean, right? But I was probably just like a stage two. And some people, you know, out there that have serious, serious fucking opioid addictions, heroin addictions, they're stage four.
Yeah.
Right? Those are the people that it's going to take a miracle to get them back.
Totally.
Right? And so if you catch it early enough, that's great, man. That's good. That is a good thing.
Well, and
I think
mean,
it was
part
a good
it,
thing in my case. I think it's probably a good thing in your case too.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, you just can't listen to somebody who says, "Oh, that's not a real addiction."
Right. I mean, I would have, and that's the thing. I would have never posted it online and shared it with
people. Well, posting it online is probably like a whole nother thing.
Yeah. I mean, I never would have shared it that publicly, except that I tried quitting last year and it lasted a few months and then I slipped right back into it.
Yeah.
And it, so it wasn't like, I wasn't sharing to get attention or to get some fucking pity party. I was sharing it because, you know, like we talked about, Facebook is the music community for me.
Sure.
Like Facebook is everybody I see regularly in the city. And so to have people just know, like you, who I've hung out with once and who knew walking in here that I had this issue. Like, to just tell people, look, this is the deal.
Yeah.
It'd be really great if when I see you, you don't, you know, you just try and help me not drink. You know, kind of keep me accountable.
Right.
So I'm not, you know, and that's the hardest thing. I mean, honestly, for me, the hardest thing is going to shows and not drinking in social settings. Because I'm a very introverted person.
Yeah.
And I don't do great with small talk. Surprisingly, this podcast is going way better than I thought it would for that reason. So for me, the best time to drink is when I have to go deal with a bunch of people that I don't know that well.
Yeah.
And really the whole point of that was, hey, I'm going to be in public. I have to talk to you fuckers and I don't like doing that. Please help me not drink.
Right.
You know?
No, I totally get that because I mean, a large part of going to AA or NA meetings, Narcotics Anonymous, is that you have a ton of people to lean on and a ton of people who have been through the same thing and know your exact thought process.
Right.
Because everybody has fairly the same fear, the same hang-ups with, you know, their friends knowing about it or something like that, and the same depression over, you know, not feeling like you are stacking up to where you should be.
Yeah.
And that's a good that's a good thing. I mean, maybe you should look into it, man.
Yeah, I've thought about it. I mean, I think I've mostly thought about it because to go sober when you're 23 years old.
You're only 23?
Yeah, I'm 23.
Wow.
I know. That's a lot of shit when you're 23.
Yeah.
But like to become a parent, deal with kind of like nobody on the planet has the same parenting situation that I have. And it's brought a whole lot of stress with it. And it's
I think you're wrong on that one. I think a lot of people probably have the same
issues. I think, yeah, a lot of them are the same, but I've never heard of anybody else as a dad who fought so hard to see their kid and kept getting shut down, not only by the mom, but like by the U.S. government.
Right.
Like to have people fucking put up barriers to keep you from being able to see your kid more regularly. Like I was limited to only being able to Skype my kid once a week for a long time. And now we're up to three.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get to see my kid. I didn't see a photo of my kid for the first 26 days he was born.
Uh-huh. Are we going a little too into depth in that?
Maybe. I mean, maybe, but
I don't want to get you in trouble.
It's fine. But it's just like to not see my kid for the first month, like the kind of depression that leads you to.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, like I was saying earlier, dude, I can't.
I feel like sometimes when I say this shit, I'm like trying to throw a pity party and that's not it. It's just like to have done all this shit at 23 makes me really scared that I can't keep it up for the next 50, 60 years. I love whiskey and I love wine. Like I'm happy without the beer. I lost the beer belly in like a week and that's great. And I don't miss beer at all, but I fucking love really good whiskey. Yeah. And so the idea that at 23, I just told everybody and their fucking cousin on Facebook, hey, I'm never going to drink again. And if I do, you should all just like call me a hypocrite.
Yeah.
Like I basically asked for that.
Right.
So now to have said that at 23, guess what? You just made it so for the rest of your life, you're not allowed to fucking drink a glass of wine. You know, it's scary. Yeah. It's like,
there's a lot of people in that same situation, man.
Yeah.
Think about it on this terms. And this is how I have to, and I have to constantly remind myself about this too. Is it fucking worth it?
Yeah.
Like, is it worth, the 2 hours that you're going to enjoy this and possibly fucking make something worse?
Yeah.
Because of your actions.
Yeah.
Is it worth that? Is it worth the 2 hours? Is it really?
Right.
You know? Fuck, I have to tell myself that on a daily basis with other things too, like buying fucking fast food.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, totally. We live in the back of the Dick's parking lot.
Oh my God, man. Like my addiction with habanero crispy tacos from Taco Time is next level, man.
Do we need to have a talk?
Like might have to. Because I'm like
Anonymous?
I'm like stage four with the fast food now. Yeah. You know? Like, I mean, it's a serious ordeal in my life, but I got to tell myself every once in a while, I was like, is this really fucking worth it? Is the 10 minutes of eating this thing that you're going to enjoy worth the fucking 4 hours of like, you know, food coma and bloating that you're going to have afterwards?
Totally. No, I feel you. I mean, that's the thing is I've had nights where we're in our apartment and I'm just like, I need dicks. I haven't eaten anything in a while.
Yeah.
And it's like, I shouldn't eat that right before I go to bed.
Right.
Your body's never going to digest dicks in the first place. It's never going to digest it.
It's like bubble gum.
Fucking 11:30 at night.
Sit in your stomach like bubble gum, man.
It's just not worth it.
So do you feel like all of this stuff has given you new or renewed sense of where you want to be and where you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think to have had a child, become sober, basically tried to run my own business now as a band.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working a real job right out of college. To have graduated college, like all this shit, I think I feel like I'm 40 years old in a 23-year-old body.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't feel like I'm in my early 20s. I just feel old.
Yeah.
And so I think it definitely gives you a different outlook on everything. You know, I mean, most people my age are going out to the bars every night and, you know, just, I don't think anybody's in a serious relationship mostly at my age and at least not in my generation. And, you know, people don't you know, they're fine just bartending or whatever to get by. And, you know, I got to figure out how to pay child support. That's something most 23-year-olds don't have to deal with.
Yeah. And yeah.
So, like, I have to turn down going on a lot of band tours because I need to stay at work and I can't take the time off because I got child support to pay. And
like one coming up with Acid Tongue is going to Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to Europe in April and I'm going to stay here.
Uh-huh.
They're going on tour for Thanksgiving down the West Coast and I'm staying here because I'll have my kid. And that's fine. I mean, I'd rather have my kid than go stay on people's couches for a week and not make any money. But, you know, at some point it's like the whole reason I'm doing this is to be a musician and I can't be a musician. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely given me different priorities than most people have, at least at my age. And I'm fine with that. I mean, I'm happy with where I'm at right now. And, you know, I told Maya my new goal is to be on the cover of a Men's Fitness someday as, like, the drummer guy who's in super good shape, which is way different than it was before, you know.
It's a great core workout, man.
It's a great core workout. I mean, the way I play drums, it's a great everything workout.
Yeah, so. Dude, I've seen you. So I don't know if I've actually seen you play live, but I've seen videos of you playing live, and you really fucking hammer.
Yeah,
you hammer those drums, man.
It's hard to tell people that your band sounds like Led Zeppelin without sounding like a dick. And like, I really don't try to just copy Led Zeppelin or anything, but you know, those
Bonham's
were
your guy.
Bonham, Mitch Mitchell, you know, Keith Moon, all those 60s dudes that were playing jazz rock, basically. I mean, that's what it was. It was just a bunch of dudes who grew up on jazz and played really heavy rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, Black Sabbath. And I mean, the Rolling Stones are my favorite band. Charlie Watts probably isn't who I play like on drums, but just all those dirty, nitty gritty 60s guys. That's all I listen to all day.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't listen to anything new. I'm trying more because my girlfriend plays modern electronic music. Like, I'm really trying to branch out a little more, but I mean, my comfort zone is all late 60s, early 70s records.
Sure.
And so that's what I play like. And I don't think a lot of people play like that now.
But I think that drumming style can fit into like the indie rock genre.
Yeah.
Definitely the like heavy stoner rock genre.
Yeah.
Man. Like, I mean, fuck. Have you heard this band Red Fang?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Dude.
Those guys are rad.
John Sherman.
They were coming up while I was still living down there.
Amazing, amazing drummer, man.
Yeah.
And like he kind of has like a Bonham-esque kind of style too, the way he beats the shit out of that drum set.
Yeah, I mean, for Acid Tongue, it's like we're playing very Mac DeMarco.
Yeah.
Or like, who else? Ty Siegel kind of like indie rock stuff.
Sure.
And
yeah.
Honestly, Ty Siegel is the only person I've ever seen that plays drums like me.
Yeah.
That dude is listening to the same shit I am. Like, and I know because I've listened to interviews with him. We're both listening to the same Hawkwind records.
Right.
And we just, I showed Maya a video of him playing with his band Fuzz at this festival with him on drums. And she thought it was me at first. Just like our bodies move the same way and our hair is the same. And it's just, it's crazy. That's the only dude I know who's playing that same style. But totally. I mean, that's it is, I think indie rock is predicated on not needing to be talented. I think everything post-grunge in rock is really prefaced by you don't have to be this virtuoso on your instrument. Like, the whole point of grunge was that anybody could do it, you know? And, I mean, that was really the whole point in punk, too. And then indie kind of took that as, like, I don't, you know, there's not a lot of amazing vocalists
in
indie rock.
I think there is, and I think you're a little bit wrong on that. I would say that there are many, many different facets to indie.
Sure.
And I think one of those facets is more of a punk skewed genre, right? Yeah. That is still probably fairly prevalent where you know, I wouldn't say it's a lack of skill or artistry because it's all art.
Right.
And
you know, no,
up to an individual person to kind of like make a judgment call on what they like or not. But
I shouldn't generalize the entire genre of indie because I mean, what the fuck is indie anyway? But
right, it just means independent, really.
You know, I think there's a lot of amazing fucking indie music out there. I love Tame Impala. I love Father John Misty as far as like the popular guys go. White Denim has one of the best drummers I've heard on a record. You know, I love Mac DeMarco, but it's and like I'm not saying these people aren't talented. I'm saying, like, you look at 80s rock, and the pinnacle of being successful is playing guitar like Van Halen or singing like Freddie Mercury.
Right.
You know, now the successful bands are bands like Mac DeMarco, who will be the first fucking person to tell you that he's not an amazing singer. And I, but you know, Bob Dylan wasn't either in the 60s. It's not like that's everything. I'm just saying across the board now, there's a lot more of this like surf garage indie rock that's very predicated on playing with lo-fi recordings. And, you know, I get bitched out all the time by Acid Tongue that I'm playing too much on drums because, you know, people in indie rock seem to like drummers who are pretty either lazy on the beat or just don't do a lot of fills.
Right.
You know, and I mean, fuck, the Mama Rags are playing drum solos and jam sections. I don't know anybody else who has a drum solo in their concert. And I try not to do it for 25 minutes like I'm John Bonham. Like, I don't want to. Nobody wants to listen to that now. Nobody wants 30 fucking minutes of me just banging on shit. But, you know, I don't know anybody who's doing that stuff now.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's becoming a lost art.
It's a lost fucking art, man. I'm like,
you bring it back.
I'm like the jazz of rock in that nobody thinks it's cool and only nerds like it. And I'm never going to make any money for it.
Don't say that, man. Yeah. Don't say that. Just keep on going. Yeah. Go back to English. So. Get a master's in English. There you go.
That's
there
really what I should do.
Ian Cunningham, thank you so much for stopping by, man. It's been a pleasure talking with you. You doing okay?
Yeah, things are, I mean, that was a lot of heavy shit, but I mean, I really am. I'm doing good. The bands are both doing great right now, and my girlfriend's music on her own is doing insanely great.
Yeah.
I'm just going to fucking hitch onto the coattails of her career probably and just let that ride out. But yeah, I mean, things are good. The kid's amazing. I see him as much as I can and make the most of it. And I'm sober for a month. And
that's good, man. I'm happy, that's good. Keep it up.
Thanks.
Keep it up. Thanks. Yeah. It's been a pleasure. Yeah. Well, there you have it, folks. Ian Cunningham. Of the bands, the Mama Rags and Acid Tongue. That song that you heard in the mid of the show was the Mama Rags. The song was called Change You. And to find out more about Ian's bands, you can go to, let's see, type Acid Tongue into a search engine or go to acidtongueusa.bandcamp.com. And the Mama Rags, go to themamarags.com. That one's easy. We'll have links up at the website at air-raid.net. Mama Rags have a couple of shows coming up. Let's see. They're going to be November 12th. They're going to be playing at the Sunset here in Seattle, Washington. December 8th. They're doing a Ryan Adams versus Taylor Swift cover night at Numo's in Seattle as well. Go and check out all these bands. Remember, Acid Tongue's going to be on tour, so you can see them on tour. Well, yeah, I accidentally closed the website already. Dang it! It's done! Okay. Well, we'll have links to all that good stuff there at air-raid.net, okay? Hey, remember, we're going to be changing the RSS feed, so if you are subscribed on a third-party podcatcher app, that RSS feed is going to be changing. Please go to adore.fm, click on Air Raid, and find the new RSS feed at the Spreaker site, okay? It's super easy to find. We're going to keep on reminding you guys until it's all over with, okay? So couple more weeks for that to happen. And then check me out on Band in Seattle on all your Alaskan Air flights. Free in-flight entertainment, folks. My face. Oh, man, that's weird. That's weird to even say. All right, okay. Oh, my God. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio apps, and now on the Adore Network at adore.fm and the Spreaker app. Or just visit our website, air-raid.net, to subscribe directly to our RSS feed, which will be changing here in a couple weeks. You can access our archives tab by going there and just streaming it from their website right there. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/theairraidpodcast. Our Twitter handle is @airraidnet, @airraidnet. Tweet to us. Or my email directly to me is aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about this show, Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your cousins. Tell your dads. Yeah, tell your dads. Your dads will like this show. That's for sure. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to go out this week with another song by Acid Tongue. This one's called Nobody's Fool. We really, really appreciate your patronage this week, folks. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great week.